Hail, cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm feeling a little spooky tonight, Josh. I think the podcast is going to go live to the world, either Halloween Eve or on Halloween.
That's true.
So in honor of that, we actually have a question from Eric Freeman, who asks, you are invited to an FPL-themed Halloween party. What scary costume are you wearing?
Scary is tricky. If I were going as an FPL person, I think I would have to go as Lord Dinnery, Ben Dinnery, right? I have to find someone to be my Kevin Keegan, to sort of smile in a photo with me the whole time.
From his profile picture. Yes, of course, Lord Dinnery, the injury maestro. And I feel like you should definitely play up that Lord sort of theme. You could wear a cloak of some kind and a scepter.
I feel like I would need one of those, like one of those earpieces like newscasters have, right? So I'm like picking up the news from the latest press conference or something.
Yeah. Now, for me, I don't know if it's a stretch to call a Premier League linesman FPL themed, but I am obsessed with this lino you see always on the weekend. His name is Stephen Child. If you don't know who I'm talking about, just Google him, Stephen Child. But he looks like a transplant from Transylvania. He has this really creepy looking goatee, like a sharp goatee and a weird bald head, and he just looks like one of those guys eyes that would open a big creaky door and be like, hello, yes, we've been expecting you. So that's it.
That's great. That's like, I forgot there is that one referee in, I think he's like, is it Mexico or the South American League, where he looks just like Dracula, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That would have been the obvious choice here.
Yeah. Well, speaking of horror shows, Josh, I can just talk about my Game Week 10 results real quick.
Let's hear it.
Thankfully, I did not have any time to watch any of the football in Game Week 10. I did watch the first half of Spurs-Manchester United, and it was a really exciting first half of football. I ended up missing the goal, but here I am, 32 points, my first red arrow in a while, and I dropped like a good 300,000 in overall rank. I had two free transfers going into game week 10, right? So I brought in Richarlison and Jesus. Made the big move this week to finally drop Lukaku.
Right.
And that obviously didn't work. I put the armband on Jesus, hoping he'd score big against West Brom. The big victory at first was that Jesus even started. Right. That was half the battle. But ended up getting a yellow card and 2 points on a Jesus captaincy. Yeah. Richarlison also returns 1 point. But I dropped Aaron Moy, which was a long time coming. I felt really good going into game week 10, but the only points coming were De Gea and my main man, Pascal Gross. So there you have it.
Yeah, Pascal Gross every week. So when did you make your transfers? Because I saw that you'd taken two and, you know, you still had Kane in your squad. And so did you make your transfers on? Because you went home. You saw the family this weekend, right?
So, yeah, I had some family business to attend to. I left on Friday morning. So I did the Moy Richarlison transfer on Thursday. I actually did Lukaku to Jesus early in the week. A lot of people who are team value obsessed will back me up on this one. But Lukaku was pegged to price drop basically every night last week. And at one point, Fantasy Football Fix had him at like 218% guaranteed to drop to 11.6.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, I'm glad you brought this up, because there was some talk of some sort of conspiracy or something, and someone was like, "Oh, well, Mark from Fantasy Football Scout has Lukaku," and so he's. And I was like, I just love the idea that he would throw away like all of his credibility and possibly like ruin their company just so that he could save like a tenth of a point on Lukaku.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it hasn't happened. I mean,
there was a more plausible conspiracy theory out there that the FPL towers were trying to not discourage the casuals by dropping the most owned player.
Do they even know the point
totally
has happened? No, it's not a conspiracy. Clearly people were buying him as quickly as they were selling him or something. I mean, idea that's a conspiracy to save him from dropping 0.1 million. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. So I felt really good about those transfers, but yeah, making them early on, I totally missed the Kane is most definitely out of the weekend talk on Friday, and I missed an opportunity to do a little hokey-cokey with him. I think long-term, I'm not even convinced I would have moved Kane had I known that going into the weekend.
You might not have moved Lukaku.
Yes, you're right about that. You are right about that. But that die was cast earlier in the week. I have no true regrets about the Kane thing. Now you moved Kane.
I did move Kane. I mean, partially I had 2 weeks, so I actually had a pretty good week. I finished on 62 points. I'm back up into the top 100K. I'm at 91,000 now, so it's nice where I want to be. I want to be back in that top 100K. So moving on up, it was, you know, the problem was I had 2 weeks in a row where I couldn't field 11 players. And you know, Ben Davis, like I was certainly hoping he was going to start, but I couldn't risk it. I mean, if Davis didn't play, then I would have had Davis and Bemba and Chalaba all not playing on my bench. And there was a chance I could have only had 10 players play again. So I almost felt like I was forced to make the Morata move. That's what I did. So I went Kane to Morata. You know, Kane was about to drop anyway. I had sold Kane and brought him back. And, you know, prices have been fluctuating so much. I didn't really even have any value built into him. So there was no real, like, value hit for me.
Maybe you know, 0.1, or it's just going to be a straight swap to bring him back in if he's
actually 12.6. I've actually already saved 0.1 because he's dropped since I dropped him. Okay. And Morata's actually set for, I think, his second price rise. So I might actually save 0.2 million all told. Wow. And I just have to, you know, in this
You're
podcast,
like Gordon Gekko over there.
Yeah. But so I got assisted into a good game week. I had assists from Morata, Lukaku, Salah, Kolasinac, and Loftus-Cheek. Backline really came through. Kolasinac finally delivers, right? I mean, after all my kvetching on Twitter about him,
he did his best to catch up to Monreal in one fell swoop.
He did, yeah. Goal, assist, and three bonus points. Also had Phil Jones, who picked up 3 bonus points. And then I had Ward. And then even the 3 from Elliott. I got 9 points today, which was just a nice way to end the week. And I felt like I had to put up like a bit of a number today because, you know, with all the stuff that happened with Aguero not playing and Kane not playing, I mean, I think Kane was still the fourth most captain player overall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that includes a lot of teams that are just like dead teams effectively, but still, I knew that there were a lot of vice captain points coming in too. So, yeah. So if I wanted to stay in that top 100K, I felt like I needed a couple. I actually felt a little unlucky to lose that second clean sheet because that didn't look like a game that anyone was going to score in today. The Burnley Newcastle match. It was, did you watch any of it or did you,
I was in a cab on my way home from the airport. So I was tracking the miserable tweet storm of people predicting whether it was going to be 0-0 or 1-1.
Yeah.
It was really death defying tweets out there.
It was, exactly. If some people have attackers, most people just had one defender or two defenders in those teams. And they were just like, nobody score, please. Nobody score.
Yeah, I'm looking at your squad, Josh, and I love weeks like this for my team where the points are just, it's just like buckshot. It's spread mm-hmm. everywhere across your 11-player squad. Nice consistency.
Yeah, the only thing that was kind of frustrating is that of any of the players, including my keeper, I captained the one player with the least amount of points. I also captained Jesus, and I felt almost nearly certain he was going to start. I thought he would play at least 70 minutes. I think West Brom conceded something like the most goals at home or second most goals at home. You know, Manchester City have scored a ton this year. So I figured Pulis would set up really conservatively, and I just didn't think it would matter. And it actually really didn't matter. I mean, it was a relatively open game. I was kind of surprised. I didn't feel like West Brom acquitted themselves poorly in this game. You know, I felt like they really tried, and they scored a goal. Like, you know, they equalized right off the bat in that match. And but Jesus had maybe his worst game as a pro. Yeah. I mean, he was really off the boil. And so I guess my hope now is that he doesn't play at midweek. And then I wonder if I just go again, you know, if I just captain him again.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, captaining a Man City player at home to Arsenal is just like, it's irresistible. Oh, you know, I mean, they're going to score like 7 goals.
I'm picturing Jesus like running in and around in between per Mertesacker's legs like a little squirrel, and it's going to be amazing. So, yes, I'm hoping for the same thing.
Certainly frustrating to bring in Jesus 2 weeks ago and get 1 point and 1 point in the last 2 game weeks.
Yeah.
And captain him one of those two. And I know a lot of people feel the same way, or they have Aguero. so let's, sorry, I need to put on a cough button here, Brendan. So before we get into all the Man City and everything else talk, let's quickly look at the Always Cheating Super League, see where it is.
Yeah, it's the best of the best, Josh. The best players, our best listeners. I wonder if there is anybody in the Super League that doesn't listen to the podcast.
Well, Fabio Borja still hasn't reached out, and maybe it's he's busy. He's busy working on that novel, or maybe he, you know, maybe he's a dead team. I love the idea that he's on, like, he's just a straight up dead team. He's 35 points above everybody else, and that's just how he rolls.
That's what Always Cheating is all about. Okay, I'll run through the top 10 real quick of the Always Cheating Super League. Of course, it's the greatest mini league in the world. You can still join. Just go to alwayscheating.com, click the league tab, or the code is all over our social media. So, top to bottom, Josh, we're starting at 10. It's Bogdan Verbica. I apologize, Bogdan. You have a tricky name there. Eighth place, we have Ty, Sam Jones, and Abdullah Al-Mamoun. Moving up, we've got a lot of green arrows here in the top 10 this weekend, Josh. Mm-hmm. Seventh place, Andre Bergstrom. Sixth is Mark Maxwell. Fifth place, Jay Lorenzana. Fourth place, Joshua Williams. Third place, John Eric Mader. In second place, Nick Tudhope, Football Friend FC, one of the more friendly FPL names I've ever seen, Josh. And, of course, holding down first place, as he was last week, it's Fabio Borges. Clichy's clean sheets, game week score of 56 points, and a total of 658. Again, Fabio, if you're out there listening, I don't know if you remember when David Letterman would constantly moan to get Oprah Winfrey to come appear.
Yeah, I remember he had like a whole list of guests who were too afraid to come in his show, and if they came on, he would like cross them off the list.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to keep asking you, Fabio, to write in to the pod until you actually do. So congrats on being number one, but please write us.
I know, and I don't even think I'm looking at him. I'm on his page right now. Fabio, I'm on your page, man. I see all of your classic leagues. I see all of your head-to-head leagues.
What's his overall rank right now with 658?
He is 142 in the world. He is Portuguese. Fabio, hope you don't mind me giving that away. I thought that he was Brazilian, but, you know, I guess...
Or Argentinian, perhaps?
That's what I meant. Yeah, thank you. Anyway, well done, Fabio.
We're going to get a private investigator on this.
Yeah. Spend all our Patreon money on a private investigator to find Fabio. So speaking of Patreon, Brandon, we did a quick check-in on the Survivor League. It is annihilating people, once again. The Survivor League is a
place for annihilation. It's brutal to predict anything this season, I'll tell you what. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so we are down to 18 managers in the Survivor League. We had about 100 to start. Through 3 weeks, we have already lost 80 managers. So it's a few too many to actually list off here, but congrats to all of you. The winner will get to be on the podcast, and so we'll reach out to you when that happens.
And one of the many perks at our Patreon page, Josh.
Yeah, and you and I actually, I have a couple of ideas. You know, I got to tell you, Brendan, my wife has a couple of good ideas for
Here we go.
Yeah, the Yoko. no, but we've got a couple things in mind for Patreon supporters. And if you are a Patreon supporter and there's something that you think would be cool, we've talked about things like Periscope and even like setting up like a voice line where people could, you know, call in and leave a voicemail that we could air on the podcast. You know, let us know what you think would be a cool feature as a Patreon supporter, and we'll definitely consider it. But we've got a couple ideas as well.
Yeah, so patreon.com/alwayscheating, or there's a link there at our website, alwayscheating.com. Josh, it's not all good news this week. We have rants.
Yeah, it was a swingy week. I'm not surprised we have some big rants. I mean, I feel like this was a moving day in a lot of leagues, right? It was a chance to move up 20 or 30 spots.
Yeah, I like that, moving day. Yeah. The first rant we have, I kind of relate to, because you got the Sterling goal and I got the classic KDB two-pointer. Overchubs over on the FPL Reddit site, which we love, says Sterling is the worst player in the world. Gets benched but still scores. I hate Pep and I hate him.
I mean, I don't agree with any of that.
You don't hate Pep even?
I do. Okay, what I regret is not bringing in Sané. I mean, obviously, right? I mean, had we known.
Sure. I repped for Sané last week. I'll stand up for myself here.
Sure, and I will admit, I thought Sterling would play. I mean, okay, granted, you know, before we recorded yesterday's or last week's podcast, we didn't know that it was going to take them 120 minutes at home to beat Wolverhampton.
A whole episode of MTV's Matt Pinfield hosted 120 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was just, it was a brutal run because, so they have this West Brom game, which is almost the easiest game of the, not almost, it is the easiest game of the like a three fixture run. So it's, you know, West Brom and then Champions League. I believe they're away to Napoli in the Champions League. And then they play home to Arsenal on Sunday. So, you know, if Aguero played, I think he, did he play the full 90? Or I think he played like 85 the week before. Plays the full 120 at midweek. There was just no chance he was going to start on the Saturday.
Yeah.
And
that was,
you know,
that was more bankable than Sterling's rotation. I think we could almost promise that Aguero wouldn't play.
I don't blame managers who brought Aguero in early. I mean, you know, I don't think any of us thought he would even play in a League Cup match at home to Wolverhampton, you know, let alone play 120 minutes. I mean, you thought even if he came on or started in that game, he wouldn't play. They'd sub him off at the 60-minute mark or something. It was just crazy that he played the whole time. And so it was just a weird match. And then, so, you know, Sterling played 120 minutes too. And then suddenly you were in this position where, you know, the only two safe starters this weekend were Sané and KDB. And I guess all the defenders, although a lot of good that did for them, right?
Yeah, what a disaster. My John Stones pickup hasn't really given me anything just yet. One clean
sheet. Yeah, I know. And Ben Mee with 9 points today, too. That's kind of...
Oh, for those of you keeping score at home.
Yeah, that's true. I think I'm the only, like, even more than you, I remember that you moved me to Stones. Yeah, it was in Otamendi, who I might have been the single, maybe after Aguero, the most transferred in player this game week, you know, on 0 points.
Yeah, rough. Yeah. I mean, if anyone had a transfer that worked out, let me know.
Yeah. Jeremiah Johnson says... waking up at 2 a.m. to change your captain, Hazard to Salah, what is this a sign of?
You're losing your mind, Jeremiah. I mean, that's just a sign that you're an FPL obsessive. I think we've all done that.
Right.
I'm usually, you know, pretty drunk in that situation. And that's
yeah,
fine.
It's like the, you know, the slightly discredited author Malcolm Gladwell, Brandon?
I'm familiar with him, yes.
You know, he had that book Blink, and it's about, you know, the sort of first impressions. And yeah, I feel like a lot of the time the person that I just think, like, right off the bat, like when I'm setting my team the weekend before, right? Like every Sunday, I'd like kind of just in case I get hit by a bus, right? I like go ahead and just put together like a dummy lineup for the following weekend. I don't really care because if I'm dead, I'm not sure why it's so important, but you know, I want to have that team in place.
It's a question worth asking.
So I always like to have that lineup set, and then I just pick whoever I think, just quickly, you know, 20 seconds, who I think the best captain is.
I'm just thinking about, I am the same way. Like, my team is already set for next week.
Sure, mine is too.
And now I'm just equating it with my impending death. This is really sad.
But I just wonder how often, I mean, I guess there's no way to like go back and check this, but how often the player that I instinctively captained, like how often he's overperformed the player that I ultimately captained 5 days later, right? Because I often end up switching it.
That's one for whichever genius runs the a new PLA site. I feel like he could come up with that, or she.
Yeah, someone has to like incept us though, right? And like find out.
All right, last rant of the week comes from Jonathan Mills, who says, "I don't even like NFL, but can you change your podcast theme this week? I don't want to talk about FPL." So, Jonathan, I feel your pain. I'm sitting 32 points. It's a disaster. But I'll tell you this: NFL isn't really much fun to talk about these days, anyway.
No, that's the no fun league, Brandon. That's what they call it.
All right, Josh, let's run down real quick what we're going to talk about in this episode. We've got a few distinct parts coming up. One is inspired by a question we got from a listener. Lucky streak or viable FPL asset? So we're going to talk about players who have been sort of under the radar, players who have been on a hot streak. Are they worth picking up or not? We're going to talk about goalkeepers, one of my favorite subjects. They never get play on the Always Cheating podcast, but
it's true.
But they do this week. Also, we're going to talk about some transfer techniques, particularly with the international break coming up, and a lightning round before we get to our Game Week 11 preview. So we'll take a quick break and be right back with all that great stuff.
Same old podcast, Always Cheating.
Brandon, we are back. Part one, Lucky Streak. Ian Wilson sets the table for this section. He says, lucky streak or viable FPL asset. And then he lists a bunch of people.
Yeah, like maybe we can talk about these guys one at a time very briefly, because there are a lot of, I guess, so the first 10 weeks or before we got to week 10, it was just filled with all heavy hitters. If you didn't cost 10 million or at least eight or 9 million, you weren't worth having.
Get out of here. Yeah. Get out of here.
Hit the road, Jack. Yeah, so now we have lots of viable cheapos that are playing into some late wild carders or people just tinkering around their midfield and front line. So the first one here is Glenn Murray. Lucky streak?
Yeah. Yep, for sure. I think I saw that his conversion rate is something like 85% or something. He's got this incredibly unsustainable conversion rate. And he also picked up a penalty, which is not anything you can really plan, especially with a team like Brighton. They're just not going to win a lot of penalties.
He's also like 30 old.
Yeah, he's like 34. He's injury prone. Not a viable FPL asset. He is a lucky streaker.
Now, my transfer in, which I had high hopes for, a lot of people had high hopes for Richarlison on Watford. And a lot of people, we were talking about captaining, sounded like a total Michigander there. talking about captaining Richarlison this weekend. Didn't pan out, got a yellow card, one-pointer.
I think our friend Dave from Burnley was a Richarlison captainer.
For me, that one-pointer seems more of the blip than not. He has been putting in very consistent performances over the last month. I mean, this is his first non-returning game since game week 5. You look at game week 6 through 9, it's 7 points, 10 points, 5 points, 5 points. Playing the full 90. Watford seemed to be relying on him for attacking output. He's just sort of showing he's a young player. He's not putting away those chances he needs to.
Yeah, exactly. I had him for game weeks 3, 4, and 5, which I think are the only three game weeks outside of game week 10 that he didn't deliver points, attacking points. But I agree. I mean, I like this team. I like the way that he's getting himself in position to score, but also to set other players up. I like Marcos Silva a lot, their manager. I think he's definitely a viable FPL asset. He's also, he's still really affordable. What is he, like 6.4 million or something like that? It's very easy to bring him in.
Yep, he rose this week to 6.4, but still very affordable. It's just like really disappointing. Home to Stoke, just Watford as a team couldn't put a goal past Stoke, which is they're in really terrible form. But it was on the Scoutcast. I think they were talking about Richarlison in particular. His home form has not been the best this season. Definitely looking for points from him away from home. And what better team than the garbage Everton to play next week in game week 11? So Richarlison away at Goodison Park, that could be a good opportunity for him.
Especially if Keane is still injured for that game. I mean, oh my God. If I had known that Everton were going to be without Keane for that game away to Leicester, I think my move actually, I would have brought in Vardy instead of Morata because, I mean, they just kill teams with slow defenders like that.
Ashley Williams is a case study in how to go from a great Premier League center back to a complete waste of space and just
It went the full John Terry. Terry sort of fell apart last year.
All right, here's an interesting one. Wilfred Zaha. Yeah. So this is – I don't know that we need to really talk about Zaha, right? He's great. Have him. But the real talking point here is Crystal Palace as a team.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this team has started to figure it out a little bit. I mean, Roy Hodgson, who's – people kind of make fun of him, but he's a very solid manager with a long track record and – certainly when it comes to, mid-table, lower-table clubs, he's done really well. I mean, he took Fulham to the, Europa League final, for goodness sake. So, I think that Zaha is totally viable. I mean, we all thought that going into the season, and he's just been injured for like 7 weeks. And so he's pretty affordable now, right? I mean, he's like 6.7 million, something like that.
Close. You're close. 6.8, Josh. But
okay. Okay.
And I was thinking, he seemed a little overpriced. Well, okay, he didn't seem overpriced at the start of the season, but then the form that Palace took and then the fact that Zaha got injured, any price was too high a price to pay. But I think you're right. 6.8 is actually a pretty good bargain for a team that looks like they're on the up. All right, so next is Riyad Mahrez. So you were just talking about Everton's defense maybe flattering to deceive. Do you think that Leicester as a whole were flattered by how bad Everton are and how leaky their defense is without Keane?
This one's a really tough one for me. I mean, you know, the problem is that Mahrez has kind of been off form for a season and a half now. I mean, it's not like he... Even last year, he was really almost never in form, right? So we're talking about a season and a half of being on a... I mean, it's like... I'm still finding it a little hard to believe. I mean, the real problem here is that his price is still way too high, right? He's still priced like...
Yeah, he's 8.4.
Like a team that just won the league. His price should be like 7 million. He should be like... He should have been priced like Zaha coming in this season, given that, you know, Leicester finished, you know, whatever it was, like 14th last year, and he had 6 goals and 4 assists. I mean... You know, I mean, he was more expensive than Gylfi Sigurdsson going into the season, or yeah, maybe he was the same price.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any manager out there that can justify spending 8.4 not on a Man City midfielder at this point. And yeah, the output isn't even comparable to what you're getting with Mahrez. And we're hopefully talking about lots of other midfielders like Richarlison or Zaha that are way more affordable than Mahrez and have proven in the near term that they're better value.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even if you just can't, you know, deal with all of the stress of having like another Man City midfielder, you could still look at someone like, I don't know, like Philippe Coutinho, right? Who's like 8.9 million now. He's set to come back this weekend. I'd rather have him over Mahrez.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, next on our list, he's a favorite whipping boy here recently on Always Cheating, Mame Diouf from Stoke. Probably the lucky streakiest of all these players we're talking about. This guy's kind of trash, isn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of trash. I'm like completely not a believer in Diouf. I mean, Diouf had one goal last season. One goal, Brandon. He's a striker. A striker that has one goal over an entire season, even if he had some injuries, that's just... I refuse to believe that it's going to happen for him.
It is bananas that he went 3-for-3 between game week 7 and 9. I can't really wrap my head around it. And I'm actually surprised looking at his minutes real quick, Josh, the fact that he's played the full 90 in every single match bar the West Brom game in game week 3.
Right. And he's been playing as a striker again. So he's, I don't know, sometimes he's a converted winger and sometimes he's a striker. I don't know what's going on anymore. I can't keep it straight with Juve, but I would much rather have Tammy Abraham for the same price.
Pascal Gross, that guy is probably the most viable of all the FPL assets. Well, okay, so between Richarlison and Pascal Gross, what are you thinking? The goal threat with Richarlison probably wins out there?
Well, yeah, Pascal Gross is, what, about 0.8 million cheaper? Maybe Gross just for the savings.
Yeah. The guy is like clockwork so far, Pascal
Gross. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could definitely make an argument for having both of them, right, and just in playing with the four-man midfield again. I mean, it's so interesting how there's so many different formations this year. I mean, the four-man midfield, I guess it's ultimately a good thing. Like, we've all convinced ourselves that you could do four at the back, that you can do, you know, one striker. There's all these different ways to play now. And it's opened us all up, so our teams are much more fluid than they've been in the past, right? I mean,
totally.
I feel like for years we were all just locked into this 3-4-3.
Yeah.
And now it's like I'm introducing the idea of four in the middle again. You know, it's like, it's kind of fun. I like it.
We've finally moved beyond you, Robin Van Persie. Van Persie is so far in the rearview mirror that now we're experimenting with formations.
Yep.
All right, Tammy Abraham, a player that we might never agree on, Josh. Do you still...
What more do you need, Brandon? Another assist this weekend.
Well, okay, so my opinions alone, this one comes down to not whether it's a lucky streak or viable asset. It goes back to what you were just saying about team structure. Tammy Abraham is a rotation forward. And I would say, yeah, bring him into your squad. Right now I have Calvert-Lewin, who, yeah, he's trash. He can't do anything. The whole Everton team is no good for anybody right now. I will freely admit that Calvert-Lewin is an anchor on everyone's FPL team that has him right now. And
it's just you.
Yeah, it's just me. I'm the only one out there. But that slot I've kind of carved out. I will play three up front when Everton have maybe a decent fixture. Same with Tammy Abraham. Don't bring in Tammy Abraham to play him week in, week out. I don't see that as a great use of funds. You probably have Tammy Abraham because you have a great four-man midfield that you should be playing.
Okay, right. So viable FPL asset, then we can both agree on that, given that frame.
That is about as close to softening on Tammy Abraham as you'll ever hear on this pod.
Right. Now you're just being stubborn about it.
Oh, yeah. I will continue to hold this line until, yes, 1 week soon I actually bring Tammy Abraham without telling anybody.
Exactly. It would be such an easy move. It's a lateral move.
All right.
Kevin Abraham. Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah, and we actually have a question from FPL Troll who says, is Aaron Ramsey the new Alexis Sanchez? So some recency bias. Perhaps, or
what does that mean? Like I don't think so.
I mean, Alexis had a
to state the obvious. I don't think so.
Yeah, definitely not. But the fact is, Alexis came in and did an FPL cameo last week. I mean, where was he this week?
Yeah, I mean, full confession here. If I had wildcarded last weekend, or okay, if I'd used the free hit chip, which a lot of people did, no one really responded to talk about a successful. I don't think this is a week where the free hit chip really worked out. I think it became very in vogue on Friday that everyone was suddenly rolling out the free hit chip. It was like it's become in vogue because suddenly the FPL like Twitter feed is starting to talk about it too. Yeah. And they like to. They like to just follow along, see what everybody's doing, and then they jump on it, and then we all like kind of get mad because it takes the fun out of it. But a lot of people were doing it, and if I had done that, I definitely would have brought in Alexis, and I definitely would have captained him. I just thought it was he was coming off, a goal and assist the game week before. As we mentioned in last week's podcast, he's on like every free kick, and he just had a bad match, and it's honestly, I mean, because I'm an Arsenal fan, it's hard to watch him right now. I mean, it's hard to watch someone who just doesn't seem very happy, you know. Yeah. It's like hanging out with a friend.
He's just like a bad
guy. It's like hanging out with a friend who's depressed. I mean, you want to be there for them and you want the moral support, but it's also just not a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Right.
So true. So Ramsey had this like legendary purple patch 2 seasons ago where he was just a must have and you couldn't stop.
I think it was 3 now.
Is it like, God, time flies.
I know.
Arsenal seemed like they were just humming. They kind of have been humming the last few weeks, but they've had good matchups for them. It could come to a grinding, screeching halt against Manchester City in game week 11. So I'm not sure how much we really want to dwell on Arsenal or Ramsey.
Yeah, it's like you said, I wouldn't bring him in right now. You can score against City, that's for sure. I mean, you know, if Stoke and West Brom were both able to put 2 past City, there's no reason to think that anybody can't score in this team.
If Jay Rodriguez can do it, so can you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, part of it is they're so good. I mean, the people are scoring them because they're just like camping out in the other team's opposition, and then so it's just, you know, it opens up the opportunity. It's irresistible counterattacking opportunities there, you know. Ramsey. Yeah, we'll see what he's like. Let's shelve Ramsey for now, and you know, if he delivers a way to Man City and home to Spurs, then I'm willing to be sort of convinced that he's an asset because. I mean, Arsenal are, you know, they're a good squad, and you know, I think they're up to 5th place now. I mean, they're kind of it's interesting how the table is very much looking like you'd expect it to look.
Yeah.
Now that we're 10 weeks into the season, and you know, he's a 7 million midfielder on a very good team, despite him like kvetching about Arsenal. So I mean, you know, I think that you have to consider him. You can't just dismiss him. But I still feel like I'm not totally convinced.
Yeah. All right, one more player, and then we actually will put a Man City button on this lucky streak section. Abdoulaye Doucouré from Watford. I hope I did Doucouré justice there. This man is now sitting on 4 goals over the last 10 weeks, and he costs a mere £5.4 million. Now, if you had to choose between Richarlison and Doucouré... Oh, well, let me phrase it for you this way, Josh. Is Watford the type of team where you definitely want to get in on their midfield... hell or high water, if you can only afford Doucouré and not Richarlison? is Decore viable?
No, I don't feel that way. This is not Danny Drinkwater in the Leicester title winning season. I mean, I, who is the other guy with the big nose?
Albrighton.
It's not, I don't think he's even Mark Albrighton. I don't know what to think about Decore. I mean, he scored a great goal in that Chelsea match 2 weeks ago. Is he any good? I mean, he hasn't been traditionally, right? He's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, last season was his first in the league, and he scored a goal and no assists, so.
Right, and I don't know if, I mean, and he played 1,352 minutes last season, so it's not like, you know, it's not like he didn't have any kind of run out. Yeah, exactly. It's not a huge sample size, but it's big enough. So I don't know what to think about Decore, to be honest. I'm not like itching to bring him to my team though, because I just don't know enough about his. I mean, I've watched quite a bit of Watford this season actually, and it feels like Richarlison is the one who you'd want. I mean, or maybe Perea if he can stay healthy, which you know he's been struggling to do. Yeah. But Decore is not the one who really sticks out to me.
Decore feels like he's getting toward that Loftus Cheek territory of, if you're thinking about Decore, that's probably a spot in your midfield you should be spending 4.5 on to make weight for a player like Richarlison or Pascal Gross.
Yeah, exactly. Or yeah, Pascal Gross is only, you know, 0.2 more, so I would definitely go right. for Gross.
Okay, so I wanted to just round this off with our necessary Manchester City. Every week we must talk about Manchester City, and Sané is the lucky streak guy in their midfield right now. Do we need to talk about this midfield or rotation anymore this week, or it just continues to be what it is?
Yeah, I think you just have to be logical about it, and you know, see how many minutes people are playing in the midweek fixtures in particular. I mean, it's been a stretch where they've had a lot of matches, you know, very close together. And they had Champions League, and then they went Champions League weekend match, League Cup game weekend match, Champions League weekend match. Right? This is like 2 weeks ago through this upcoming weekend. So it's, you know, it's six matches in 3 weeks, basically. There is going to be a lot of rotation there, and they had to get, you know, I mean, the reason Aguero played at midweek is he felt like he needed to get some more minutes, you know, kind of give him a real run out after he came back from the rib injury. So to me, the more important thing is whether you want to captain these players, you know, I mean, and that's the tricky part. I mean, I because if Jesus doesn't play at all at midweek, I will definitely consider captaining him this weekend. If Jesus plays 90 minutes, I think I'm probably looking at maybe bench points this weekend, right? I might just get 1 point from him. And so, you know, or if Sterling plays 90, I'm not going to captain him, because it's just, I don't think that they'll rotate the squad too much for a big match against Arsenal. And like, listen, like, kidding aside about Arsenal, it's still going to be a tough match at home. And, you know, so I do think that they'll have to play some of their top guys. But, you know, I mean, do you have any other thoughts? I mean, I think we're all kind of at a loss here. I mean, like, you know, you look on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, like, managers have been playing this league for 10 years, don't know what to do, right? I mean, people like, you know, just with, you know, tons of experience playing the game and thinking about it, or are all kind of throwing up their hands, like, I don't know what to do here.
Yeah, so we got a message from Kat.
Yeah, it's a hard one.
We got a message from Cats and Pancakes, who says Sané got a double-digit points for the last 3 weeks. Time to jump on board, or is it just points chasing? And like you're saying, it's hard to captain any of these players because we can't predict the rotation. The only thing I think we could really say is if you're considering thoughtfully getting in on Manchester City points, wait until the midweek matches to make those transfers. If you're looking at Sané or Sterling or either of the forwards, Aguero or Jesus, wait to see how the minutes pan out against Napoli in midweek before you even consider pressing that transfer button.
Yes, agreed. All right, Brandon, I'm a little talked out. Let's take a quick break.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
We're back, and Josh, I don't know if you've heard, but Always Cheating is having a contest.
I have heard.
You have heard. You helped put the contest together. So this is really exciting. Josh and I, under the auspices of our podcast, Always Cheating, we're holding a contest for you, the listener. Josh, what is your FPL team name?
My FPL team name is Morning in America.
Okay, I'm not interested in that team name. My team name is BK Broilers. Nobody's interested in that. The contest is that you, the listener, can win an opportunity to change Josh's stupid FPL team name or my perhaps more stupid FPL team name into whatever it is you want. You can change our team names to something that's flattering for you, that's not so flattering for us, or maybe it's just a funny joke about Premier League linesmen. I'm not sure. But how do you participate in this contest? Well, you have to work with our great friends over at Starting 11, which is the newest daily fantasy app for the Premier League. We've talked a lot about Starting 11 on this podcast, but just a refresher, you can find them at starting11.io. That's starting11.io. You can download their app for your iOS iPhone or your Android phone, and you're playing daily fantasy every Saturday, Sunday, any day in which there are at least two Premier League matches going. So right now, the contest is whoever gets the highest point total on any match flight in the Starting 11 app while they're challenging us. So, Josh, we've been receiving challenges for the last couple of weeks via Starting 11.
Yes, we have.
And we actually have a current leader in the Name the Cheaters team contest.
The current leader, Brandon, is John Torstensen. He's on 204.8 points. So if nobody scores a higher total than that in game week 11, he is going to get to rename one of our teams. People, we can't let this happen.
No, we can't. John is a cruel man. He will name our team vengeful. Bad things.
Exactly. John, don't just walk away, John. Walk away. Yeah. And someone challenge us to Starting 11, play us in a head-to-head match, and we'll give you a shout-out on the podcast. And if you get to win, you get to rename our team. I think I said through Christmas, right? So you get a nice... Yeah. A nice big 6 weeks with a renamed team. Yeah, now it's either me or Brandon. You have to decide.
Yeah, you decide. But yeah, just do it for the fun of playing Starting 11. I can't stress that enough. The app is beautiful to use, and you're making real-time substitutions while we're watching the Premier League games, and you feel very involved. It's a lot of fun. So again, check our friends out there at starting11.io. Download the app for your iPhone or Android today.
Goalkeepers. Brandon, you're right. We never talk about keepers on here. It's kind of boring. We talk about them at the start of the season, but then once the season starts, you almost never make a transfer for a goalkeeper. And it's funny that you actually that you kind of added this as a section of the running order today, because it was something I was thinking about just this very morning. Dire Consequences says, are top drawer goalkeepers worth the 5.5 million? If so, who are the best three to go after? Now, he knows you can only have two, right? Tops.
What?
So... to me, there's only one goalkeeper that I would go after at 5.5 million. Actually, well, he's a little more than that, but it's David De Gea, who is 5.7 million. And I'm starting to think that he is really worth every penny at 5.7 million.
Yeah, so this defies conventional diehard FPL manager logic. We even said in our season preview that De Gea is one of the Manchester United players to avoid for the reason that you can find better value in your defense elsewhere. And in seasons past, you've had guys like Tom Heaton, the guys on lower table, mid-table teams who cost a million at least cheaper at 4.5, and they're getting save point after save point. However, that no keeper like that has emerged this season. I cannot agree more that... it's the
Nick Pope, I think, is starting to emerge as that player.
Well, yeah. So we actually got a comment here from that confused guy 60 who asked, is De Gea worth 1.2 million more than Pope? So this question can be answered, I think, by just saying, well, how much do you have in the bank? How much team surgery do you want to do? If you are stuck with Rob Elliott and you want a new keeper, you're probably gonna. It's easier for you to make the jump to Pope. And I think you should be happy about that. But if you have the opportunity to go De Gea, that's the number one goalkeeper in the game right now.
Yeah, if I brought in De Gea, I would not drop Jones. I would just double up on the Man United defense. And obviously I wouldn't do it before game week 11, but they've got just a great run of fixtures coming up. I mean, they play Newcastle, Brighton, and Watford in game weeks 12 through 14. I see clean sheets in all of those matches. They do. It's a little bit of a snag. They play Arsenal and Man City back to back in game weeks 15 and 16. But then after that, it's Bournemouth, West Brom, Leicester, Burnley, Southampton, Everton and Stoke, you know, right up until right through mid-January. And De Gea basically just plays every game, right? I mean, I know he didn't play a couple games at the end of last season when Mourinho was like, I don't know, I guess he was giving some of the other guys a run out or something. But a double up starting in game week 17 might be interesting, you know, starting with that Bournemouth match.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the other premium goalkeepers. I guess the two that immediately come to mind are Lloris and Courtois. I think Peter Cech would sometimes be in that company, but he's kind of looked like a miserable old man this season. And given the attacking potential with Monreal or Kolasinac in Arsenal's defense, Cech is out of this discussion for me. So I'm looking at Lloris and Courtois aside from De Gea, and go for De Gea over Lloris. Courtois is an interesting one now that his price has dropped to 5.4. Does that somehow allow him to slip into somebody's team? We're talking a lot more and more about Chelsea assets these days, for better or worse. But I think that's more to do with their attacking than any great defensive performances Chelsea have put forth recently.
Yeah, I mean, I know they just kept a clean sheet, but they've been pretty disappointed in general. I mean, I think that so Courtois has played every game and they've kept four clean sheets in 10. That's not a great ratio for a 5.5 million keeper. I mean, you basically, I don't like to have the math worked out here, but you'd need like, I don't know, 7 or 8 clean sheets in 10 to justify that kind of price, right? Because, you know, I mean, a Burnley defender is going to give you a 5 out of 10, right? You're gonna keep a clean sheet in like 4 to 5 matches at home.
Yeah.
So, Brendan, what does your current goalkeeper rotation look like?
I have De Gea and Rob Elliott. And that's fine for me because I will play De Gea even. It actually has worked out beautifully for me to have a keeper that I really don't trust one iota in Rob Elliott, because that's prevented me from rotating De Gea in matches like against Liverpool or against Spurs, and I've been rewarded for that. So I have a rotation that is working fantastically for me. I have a premium GK in De Gea that I will never bench, and I have the cheapest imaginable starting GK and Rob Elliott that I had brought in at 4.0. So I feel like I'm set.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, that's what I would, if I were wildcarding right now, I think that's what I would have too. I would just ride out the Man City Arsenal game in 15, 16 or whatever it is. My regret actually is not bringing in Pope over Fabianski. I have one clean sheet in the 5 weeks since I brought in Fabianski. I mean, the problem is just that Swansea are awful this year, but weirdly he's not like getting a ton of saves. Yeah. So it's not really. I mean, like he looked like FPL gold in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, right? They kept a couple clean sheets. He was getting like a million saves, and it's like they've just kind of settled into being kind of crap right now. You'd
almost be better off with Jonas Lossel for crying out loud.
Yeah, exactly. I feel bad. I really like Swansea. They're kind of my second club, and I don't like to see them like this, but it's that team doesn't really have an identity right now, does it? I mean, it's kind of a mess.
So I think we've got three goalkeepers that we would focus in on here, right? We've got De Gea is almost the must-have keeper this season. Nick Pope is the best budget keeper right now, and Rob Elliott is the ultimate bench rotation for De Gea, who you never rotate. I mean, is there anything else we need to tackle here with GKs?
Not really. I mean, Lossel, you know, has looked pretty good at times. And you know, got a penalty save this weekend. He's only 4.6 million. I think, you know, he's someone who's actually getting a fair amount of saves. He sent 27 on the season. He's actually the third overall. I mean, he is kind of your old school keeper, right? The Heaton guy you were talking, like the Heaton version you were talking about a couple minutes ago.
I think you're right. Lossel is probably the closest to a Heaton. I mean, Pope's making a case though.
Yeah, and I wish that I wish Schmeichel were 4.5 instead of 5 million. I mean, this whole Leicester team is just a little overpriced by about a half million to a million. If he was at 4.5, I'd really like him because I just think he's a really classy keeper. He makes good saves. It seems like I think that team is going to shape up a little bit under Puel. I mean, I think that Danny Simpson as a 4.5 million defender is a really good option for them right now. So. Just something to think about, Brandon.
Things to think about, too. We're going to move on to part three here, and I've titled this section, Hold Your Transfer, Joshua. So we're going to talk a little bit about what are the benefits of holding on to your one free transfer and moving into a constant movement of two frees. So can I explain this to you, Josh?
Yeah, because that was not clear.
If I hold my one free transfer this week, the following week I'll go into the window with two frees. Now, yes. Some managers do this, and they exercise great discipline. And when they have those two free transfers, they then just play one, and you keep two in the bank constantly until that point when you really need it. So I don't know what is in the air this week after game week 10, but we got a lot of questions about this idea of holding your free transfer to get two at a time. We received a message from Rick Cito on Twitter who says, how about the value of banking a free transfer and playing two at a time? Scott Gill and Strawberry Labrador on Reddit also wrote in, what do you think about an approach of trying where possible to always aim to save transfers so you can make changes only when you have two frees? So
yeah, and Scott Gilman mentions the international break too, which I think is another, it is useful to have two transfers over international break if you can, because it does seem like players are a little more prone to pick up injury over those 2 weeks, and it can be kind of useful. It's also useful if you want to make, if you want to get ahead of some price changes, but you don't want to leave yourself totally cold.
Sure, you want to get ahead of that, right? Lukaku price change that's like 218% guaranteed.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, I'm not the greatest at saving transfers. I'm just a little too, I'm not the most conservative FBL player. I have a very attacking mindset when it comes to the game. And it's led to some really great seasons, and it's led to some really bad seasons. Or not bad, but just like mediocre, where I just get kind of mired in like a stubborn mode where I'm like, and you ever hear the story about how Tiger Woods never won a Masters when he was trailing on the final day?
I'm not familiar with this theory. No.
Yeah. So Tiger Woods, for all, as great as he was in his day, I think he's won 14 majors. He always was either leading or tied going into the final day when he won those majors. And his game is, he's not at his best when he's cruising and ahead. He makes really good decisions. He likes to be a front runner. Uh-huh. And when he's behind, his natural aggressive instincts just don't really play in his favor. He ends up making some mistakes. And so what I'm saying is I'm Tiger Woods, Brandon.
That was where you were going. You're a sex addict. Is that what you're telling me?
If it gets to like game week 20 and I am in first place, like look out, like you've got no shot, right? Like I will just, like my brain just like turning into like the, my two best seasons were like that, where I was just like, I was out ahead like early on and then like no one could touch me. And every other season it's like I get down and I'm just like scrambling around like desperate transfer, like I'm just like, I mean, I brought in like Johan Gabay at one point last year. Like, how could that have even happened? Like, where was my brain?
Remember that transfer.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll never live that down. So I think it is good to be, I think that there is a tendency when you're not doing as well as you want to be super aggressive, and it can work out, but it's a huge gamble and it usually doesn't work out. And I find that the managers who are really strong, I'm thinking of Nick Cummings here, Dave Wagner-Lodahl, actually, who joined our mini league and is like immediately in first place in it. He's naturally a conservative player, too. And I just think that like that is really an approach that works out. And just having patience, writing players out. I mean, I wildcarded and I dropped Richarlison. But Dave and I brought him in the same game week. He was like, you know what? I'm going to hold him out. I'm going to see what happens here. And then, so he picked up those points, it's like, sometimes it's like people like look at those transfers in a vacuum and it's like, oh, I mean, Jesus is an example of this, right? Where it's like, oh, I brought in Jesus. I got 1.2 game weeks in a row. Jesus must go, right? But like, if Jesus doesn't play at midweek and he is the, you know, one of the two strikers or the central or the lone striker at home to Arsenal, I mean, that guy could easily score a brace in that game, you know? So it's, I do think that, you know, being able to be patient and, yeah. and holding the transfers, right. Even just holding your one transfer yeah. can be really valuable.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's the takeaway for me talking about the two frees at a time. It's less the what you can do with two frees during the week. I mean, I had two frees this week, brought in Jesus and Richarlison, and I got a total of 2 points. So I don't think there's an inherent benefit to having two versus one, but what is good to think about while we're discussing this is the fact that you aren't obligated to make a free transfer every week. And sometimes if you feel that right. obligation, you can end up shooting yourself in the foot. And like you're saying, Josh, like getting antsy or wanting to point chase to warn people to be patient. And you don't have to spend that free. And it's actually, maybe it's not beneficial to have two, but it's a heck of a lot of fun to have two free transfers going into 1 week.
It is fun. Although I will say there have been times though too, where I have really convinced myself that I wanted to have those two transfers and I didn't make a logical move that I should have made just for the fun of having those two transfers. So I think that's something to be wary of too. Like if you've got a problem, just solve the problem. Right.
And
I didn't just pound my hand on the table there.
Okay, so just as Scott Gill was saying, getting those two frees going into an international break, if you want to do what Scott is telling you to do, this going into game week 11, don't make a transfer. Then you'll have two frees in the international break for 2 weeks. So just a word of warning there. All right, Josh, we're going to do a lightning round right after a quick break.
Let's do it.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Lightning round, Brandon. A lot of questions here. We're going to run through them very quickly. No more than 30 seconds on any one question. Here we go. First question, in Poch We Trust, says, did you watch the Arsenal game? If so, report. I need to know how Sanchez, Ozil, and Lacazette look. Don't worry about Ramsey. Sanchez tried too hard. Ozil looked like a guy capable of getting one assist a game. Lacazette disappointing once again.
It's crazy that they were just absolutely purring the week before, all three of these guys, world beaters.
They were playing Everton, Brandon. They were playing Everton. Slim Shady, should I keep Aguero?
Yeah, I think Slim Shady should definitely keep Aguero. His price continues to move up, despite him not getting a minute over the weekend. So there's nothing to fear there. The only thing, of course, as you well know, is you have to fear rotation. So keep your eye on the Champions League squad in midweek and base your decision on whether to... Well, okay, so if Aguero plays the full 90 against Napoli, is that just a done deal for you, Josh? Drop Aguero immediately and move somebody better in, or move an assured starter in?
No, I don't think so, because if it were a lesser match, if they were playing, you know, Crystal Palace at home or something, sure. But it's a big match. You know, it's a big Sunday match. He's playing Arsenal. And he didn't play a minute against West Brom. So I do think there's a pretty good chance that he'll start and play in that match.
All right. Ian Davis asks, foolish to sell Jesus and just go with Sterling as Man City cover. Could then get Hazard for his great run of fixtures. Okay. So Sterling and Hazard or Jesus? Seems pretty cut and dry to me, I think. I mean... Okay, given this weekend and Hazard is growing in FPL stature now.
I'm too biased right now. I can't be objective about this. I mean, it does seem like the way to go, but I mean, Jesus has actually looked like pretty good value for his price recently. I mean, not this last week, obviously, or the week before. I don't know. It would probably work out fine. I mean, Chelsea have a good run of fixtures, so sure.
Ian, we'd like to know what other strikers you're dealing with here. If you're dropping Jesus and replacing him with Tammy Abraham, I have more I have follow up questions with you.
Connor Faf Azam, he was in our top 10, wasn't he? He once was, anyway.
You know, my memory is really terrible these days, Josh.
Is Lukaku's steady trickle of points worth his price?
This is an intriguing one. So I think everyone kind of lost patience with Lukaku 1 or 2 weeks ago.
I didn't. And
you didn't. How
you
close were you to
last week? I wasn't close at all. If their fixtures just like if they were just had like a horrible run of fixtures coming week after week, but because their fixtures get so good in, you know, in game week 12, 13 and 14, I felt like I really had to stick with them. Just Newcastle at home, Brighton at home, Watford away. I mean, those are really good fixtures for a player like Lukaku, who's, you know, a bit of a flat track bully.
Yeah, so he's worth his price after the Chelsea match.
Yeah, when they have a run of playing bad teams. Yeah, I mean, there's no magic trick here. When Man U play bad teams, he looks really good.
Yeah, I don't think we need to make like just broad blanket statements about Lukaku, whether he's back or he's over or what. He is what he is. We all know what Lukaku is. There's no right. Like you said, Josh. There's no mystery.
Right, exactly. But I don't think it's like that. I mean, because there are players who are a little more streaky than that, where they can play against anybody, you know, and like when they're in form, they're just like Aguero is like this, you know, or Harry Kane. But Lukaku needs to be playing bad people on the regular. But when he does, he looks awesome, right? Like when he does, he's like a candidate for a brace or a hat trick, or you know, I mean, he would score 4 goals against bad teams sometimes with Everton.
All right, speaking of high-priced strikers, Michael Henneberg writes in, what do we do with Kane? 12.5 is a lot to sit at the end of my bench for one, possibly two straight weeks. So we don't know what's going to go down in this Crystal Palace match. If Harry Kane looks like he's going to play over the weekend, armband all the way. And I wouldn't even be concerned that he's coming off of some sort of hamstring injury.
Yeah.
I would captain him.
Yeah, I may actually bring him right back in for Morata. I have no problem transferring him out and bringing him right back in. I would like to move Kolasinac out if I could, but if I have to play – if Kane plays against Real in midweek and looks good, scores a goal or two, then, yeah, I'm definitely going to bring him back in. I can't risk it. But if he is still injured with a hamstring, I probably won't do it because – And Pochettino's been a little cagey in his press conferences. Yes. And I just think there's a chance that they just wouldn't feel like they needed him for a home match to Crystal Palace. With the international break to come, I think they might just put him on the shelf for 2 weeks. Yeah. So it's too early to tell.
But, okay, so you're dealing with only one side of this, where you're considering whether to bring him in or not. And me and Michael have the same problem here. We still have Kane, and the threat of Kane not playing against Crystal Palace means we're losing out on perhaps a big haul from another premium striker elsewhere. And I'm struggling with this idea of if there's a threat of Kane not playing against Palace, just move him out. And I think I'm leaning towards yes, Michael, because the odds are that Kane is going to fall in value again if that news breaks. So you'd be able to bring him in at the same price that you originally bought him at. So using that logic, just wait to hear what the news is. If he's not going to play, my advice would be swap him out for another striker for a one-week punt going into the international break.
Yeah. Andy Anderson says, he'd like to hear a discussion on how we pick defenders. Andy, you're in the lightning round, man. I'm sorry. It says, do you pick somebody cheap on a stingy defense or go to defenders that have attacking potential? This is my first year in FPL, so I'm still figuring out how to approach each position. It's a good question. I think that ideally you want someone with a little bit of attacking threat on, what you want is a Marcus Alonso if you can afford him. But, you can only usually get those players their first year in the league, and then the FPL figures them out and throw some like huge price on them so you can't afford them anymore. So I think sometimes what you want is the cheapest player on a really good team, the cheapest defender in a really good team. I'm thinking of Phil Jones right now as an example of this. I think David Luiz is another candidate. Yep. 5.9 million defender for Chelsea. Man City, I guess you got John Stones, who's pretty affordable at 5.5. I mean, Otamendi was the same price as Stones a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's just a testament to you have to get on these trends as early as possible. Like Otamendi right. looked like the better goal threat and better for bonus than John Stones, and off he went. And now you missed that boat. Now I think maybe John Stones could be better just by the sole fact that he's cheaper.
But Brandon, can you explain to me how Phil Jones has started 10 weeks in a row, has picked up 8 clean sheets in the last 10 matches, has picked up 8 bonus points, and has still only risen 0.3 the first 10 weeks of the season?
And what's funny is one of the clean sheets that Manchester United actually lost was one that he went out like at the 23rd minute. So
right. no points were even.
Exactly. I do wonder if it's a reputation thing. Like people just know that he's injury prone.
Yeah.
His Gern faces are known throughout the land across the internet. He looks like a terrible athlete. He plays very well, and to watch him perform, sometimes he looks magisterial. Often he looks like somebody's dad.
Yeah, and I've been guilty of this too. And I mean, I even made fun of him last week, right? Because he basically made a tackle, and he was like, "No, I'm out. I'm injured." he's like, "I tried to be athletic, and that did not work. Like, take me out of this match."
All right, we have moving on to the lightning round. Didn't you hear that lightning crash?
Yep,
I don't know. That dude there asks, is it time to talk about Delph? We're talking about Manchester City's own Fabian Delph. Is that his first
name? Yeah, it is Fabian.
I talk about Fabian so little, I was like, Fabian? Is that right? He seems to be staying at left back. So are we convinced that Delph is locked in on that position while Mendy is away? Like, Danilo is so far out of favor that Pep won't even rotate him in for Delph?
I guess so. It does seem to be the case. Here's why I wouldn't do it. There are going to be times this year, if not right now, where you want to have 3 Man City players, and you don't want to be in a position where you can't have a striker, a midfielder, and a defender from that team because one of your players is Fabian Delph, right? Like, you've got that 4 point, because he's not going to pick up that many more points, right? Like, over the next 5 weeks, who do you think is going to pick up more points, Fabian Delph or Ruben Loftus-Cheek? It's like a toss-up, right?
It is a straight toss-up, yep.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? So I would rather just have Loftus-Cheek and then have
that the option. That was perhaps the most provocative question we've ever asked on Always Cheating, I have to say.
Let's do it. Let's do some sort of tally on the Twitter feed. So I wouldn't pick up Delph for that reason. I mean, I think as a 4.5 million option who can occasionally score an assist, he's fine. And if you just know you're never going to have a need for 3 Man City players who are better than him, then sure.
All right. Benteo 85, with big teams fixtures. I'm interested in this theory that Benteo asked. With big teams fixtures getting congested in coming weeks, does it make sense to actually transfer them out for smaller teams? Less of injury and fatigue and rotation. So Benteo is thinking about transferring out Sterling to Zaha, using an extra funds to upgrade his defense. So what do you think about this theory? So you've got a lot of fixture congestion for the top teams, Champions League, what have you. Lots of rotation, particularly with Manchester City. Just get rid of them and bring in set and forget players and lower down the table.
Yeah, it's something I thought about for sure. It's something, I don't know if you've looked, Brendan, at the fixtures through, like basically late November through, Christmas. I mean, it's insane. even by the standards of the like really busy Christmas schedule, it's like kind of out of control. Yeah. There's like multiple midweek games even before you get into the holidays. And then there's all the holiday fixtures, which are, it felt even crazier when I was looking at it. Like, it felt like there's just matches every day for like 9 days in a row.
Yeah.
So it does make you a little worried about someone like Sterling. I mean, how many minutes is he going to, if he comes on in 30 minutes in some of these games, then it's fine. But I mean, it seems like right now, Pep's just, I mean, the problem is he has so much squad depth that, you can play someone like Bernardo Silva for 65 minutes and, or even a whole match and just not bring on any of those guys. I mean, so even a club like Arsenal, which is a big club but doesn't have the depth, would be maybe an option here, right? Like, maybe someone like Ramsey is an option because, he's just more likely to play in most of these games. Or even someone like Alexis Sanchez, right, who basically refuses to be rested ever.
Right.
He's an interesting option.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are making hay about Crystal Palace's fixtures after game week 11, coming back from the break. It's like fantastic. Everton, Stoke, Brighton, West Brom, Bournemouth, if they're going to get back on track as a club, that's when they do it. Zaha is going to look very enticing come game week 12. Looking at other clubs that just have great runs of fixtures, Bournemouth, still not sure what to make of them.
Yeah. We'll know more over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah. But I think you hit the nail on the head talking about Arsenal. You don't want to get too carried away with the rotation narrative and then start overlooking players that, or like Christian Eriksen, who we haven't mentioned this episode yet. That's a player who plays in a Champions League side, but he's remarkably consistent with his playing time. And for whatever reason, the Eriksen game doesn't warrant the type of rotation that other midfield players do. And,
yeah.
So you don't want to throw yourself into a panic for no reason.
All right, perfect final lightning round question. Pama Macho says, for the next few weeks, let's say, I'm just gonna list a few, 5 weeks. Who do you think is the better option between Chicharito and Rooney?
Jesus!
Quick, Brandon, it's lightning round here. Come on, let's go.
I have to say Chicharito.
Yeah, for sure. Come on, Rooney looks terrible. I mean, okay, I know he just scored.
These are like the two worst teams in the league. Among them, West Ham and Everton. I don't know why you're making me choose.
The amazing thing is, too, I mean, if you look at Everton's fixtures, they play Watford, Crystal Palace, Southampton, West Ham, and Huddersfield in four of the next five. In the next five. All really winnable fixtures. I mean, I wonder if they can turn it around, but God, they look so bad at Leicester. It's just, it's hard to believe it. But yeah, I mean, 6.9 million. I mean, the thing about Chicharito is that he's a little more fixture-proof than Rooney as well. I mean, Chicharito is such a poacher when it comes to his goals that he can score against anybody because he can just get in the right position. You know, yeah, like he'll just sort of... he scored two goals against Southampton in just that way. I would go Chicharito. Brandon, this is the lightning round. That's it.
That's
we're
it. Done. Bam.
We're out.
All right. Boom. So we're going to move on to the game week 11 preview, the last game week before our next and final international break of this calendar year. Okay. So my first question for you, Josh, for game week 11 is first and second choice for the armband. Assuming Harry Kane is healthy and you could choose from any Manchester City player, regardless of rotation.
Yeah, I guess maybe Jesus. And, you know, it's funny because we talked about that little game where you set your team a week in advance.
Yeah.
I actually think that Mo Salah has my armband right now. It's an aging West Ham defense. That team has been shipping goals all year. It's kind of like the Spurs game where, like, they're going to want to win that game, and that really plays into Liverpool's hands. You know, they're not going to sit back. They're not going to play for a draw. They need, you know, they're basically playing for their manager's career right now.
Yeah.
It just seems like it sets up really well for Salah. Right now it's on Salah. I will definitely consider one of the players on these. There's just like some big Sunday matches, right? Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man U. But it makes it difficult to captain any of those players, I think, because you don't know what match you're going to get. You know, is it going to be like a cagey 0-0? Is it going to be, you know, a blowout? I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards the 0-0s.
I'm really struggling to think if I've had a captain play on Sunday yet this season. I feel like I've always had a Saturday armband. It's always fun to kind of see where you land during the first day of fixtures, and then knowing you've got double points coming on Sunday. Not having a Liverpool player for me, I think your logic is beautiful, Joshua, for Mo Salah.
I think
that's a great option, perhaps the smartest option. But for me, I've got my armband on my if I get hit by a bus tomorrow team on Harry Kane, but he's got this really muted shade of orange, the 25% muted orange color.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you're right, of course. I mean, I forgot about Kane. I'm still thinking that he's not going to be healthy, but we'll see. I mean, I guess, healthy Kane, I think, is the automatic captain choice at home to Crystal Palace.
It wouldn't be shocking, though, if Palace is probably able to be pushed over by Spurs and you don't need to play Kane if you can give him an extra week's rest with that muscle strain. Why not? So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he was kind of healthy, but they rested him anyway.
So Kane, Salah, I think that, I think either of the, you know, whoever doesn't play at midweek for Man City is a decent captain option at home to Arsenal. I don't think Man City will have any real trouble. When I said I was leaning towards nil-nils, I was really thinking more about the Chelsea-Man United game, and I can't imagine that Arsenal will put up too much of a fuss against Man City. I think that I think City probably win that game like 4-1 or something like that.
Yeah, whoa. Jesus, what else do we say about these fixtures?
Nothing. Let's just end the podcast. We've gone on for long enough.
All right. I guess it's over. All right. Always cheating. Find us online. We're on Twitter at Hail Cheaters, Facebook.com/Always Cheating. Follow us on SoundCloud where you get all the latest audio clips. Comment on our podcast there. Our website, alwayscheating.com, where you can get links to our league. Also, our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/alwayscheating, where you can support this wonderful podcast you're listening to.
That's right. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and please leave a review or even just give the podcast a rating. It's actually very helpful for us, especially because the new podcast app is a work in progress at best. The new iOS app. So we're definitely a little concerned about people being able to actually find the podcast.
Yeah.
So the more highly rated it is, the easier it will be.
Yeah. Stop the haters. Give us a nice review on exactly. iTunes.
You can also find us on Acast, Stitcher, Google Play. You can listen just directly on SoundCloud, and that's where you find us. And we'll talk to you next week. And y'all don't know this because he didn't say anything, but Brandon flew back today and recorded the podcast, and very exhausted. So, Brandon, it's a hero's return for you. What a nice podcast you had.
Thank you, Josh. I hope I'll be rewarded by 100 points in Game Week 11. I think I really
only seems fair.
All right, this one's for you, Poku. Poku forever.
That's right. Hail Mbakani.